State investigators, backed by the New Mexico Department of Justice under Attorney General Raul Torres, launched a full-scale search of the former Epstein estate.
The so-called Truth Commission seeks to identify ranch guests and state officials who may have known what was going on at the 7,600-acre property or taken part in alleged sexual abuse.
The fact of the matter was that he was basically doing anything he wanted in this state without any accountability whatsoever. And the ranch that exists out near Stanley, New Mexico, is basically on a two-lane highway in the middle of nowhere. It was him with an airstrip and a sprawling place that he brought folks to that we know very little, if nothing, about.
Now renamed San Rafael Ranch and owned by Texas businessman Don Huffine since 2023, oddly enough.
This was obviously a dark place, and we wanted to put light in a dark place. It always shines the brightest when you do that.
Hang on a minute. Why did Republican Texas comptroller candidate Don Huffines, through his venture firm Hest Investments, pour $1.8 million into Secretome Therapeutics back in 2024, a biotech outfit pushing regenerative medicine with their lead product STM-01, derived from neonatal cardiac progenitor cells sourced from babies under 30 days old, specifically infant heart tissue from newborns with congenital defects undergoing surgery. Meanwhile, Huffine's family snapped up Jeffrey Epstein's notorious Zorro Ranch in New Mexico at public auction years after the notorious transhumanist's death. A Texas politician tied to Epstein property in New Mexico, who is now invested in transhumanist therapies, literally banking on infant hearts. Bizarre. Epstein openly discussed using the ranch as a base for outlandish eugenics-inspired schemes, including plans to impregnate multiple women with his DNA to seed an improved human race through artificial insemination and genetic engineering, ideas he pitched to scientists from the Santa Fe Institute and other elite circles he courted in New Mexico.
My name is Juliet Bryant. I was kidnapped by Jeffrey Epstein 22 years ago. A lot of frightening things happened there.
I went outside to have a cigarette. I saw these three lights like in a triangle formation. Everything got weird. I felt very scared. But then what happened is I got locked out, so I couldn't get back in. So that's also the time when I have that sort of flashback where I wake up paralyzed in a lab. There were six beings in hazmat suits around me. There's like a female doctor by my head.
It's okay. It's gonna be okay.
I think they were taking our eggs.
Whispers of even darker horrors have swirled around Zorro Ranch for years, fueled by an anonymous 2019 email purporting to come from a former staffer claiming that two foreign girls died by strangulation during rough fetish sex and were buried in the quiet hills nearby on orders from Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell.
In fact, there are records dating back to the mid-1990s of abuse happening at the ranch, including a report to the FBI in 1996 by a survivor and multiple other reports over the years. And one of the significant and important pieces of this case is to understand why justice was never pursued at the state, local, or federal level.
Zorro Ranch isn't short of strange. Back in July 2008, right as Epstein was checking into his cushy Florida jail suite for that sweetheart plea deal, his Zorro Trust suddenly clutched a $80 million winning Powerball ticket by none other than Bryce Gordon, Epstein's longtime ranch manager and the guy listed as trustee who signed off on the payout. The payout is confirmed by public records. Sounds more like a payoff. Epstein starts prison time and boom, his New Mexico playground gets an eight-figure cash infusion, likely to keep something very quiet. This renewed scrutiny could finally unearth long-buried truths or expose how deep the rot truly went.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexShowStore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
The most powerful morning broadcast in the nation, in the world, The American Journal. We do the deep dive, we do the news blitz, we do the guest interview, we do it all. But I've got breaking news here for you right now. Rex Jones reporting live for Infowars.com. Shipping sources say Iran's threatening ships trying to pass through Hormuz right now. From Eric Doherty, just in, oil tankers have been stopped from going through the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian news claims because of Israel's ceasefire breach.
Here we go.
Weren't we just talking about this?
Here we go again.
Wow. Iran knows what's coming. If they screw peace talks, the first 24 hours of ceasefire are critical. We're going to continue to cover that. Wanted to break that news live to the audience. We have Amy Dangerfield joining us now on the show. Amy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on the show. We really enjoy, we're going to have a great conversation here. There's a lot of things happening in the news cycle right now. And actually, Rex just broke something. I'm sure yes. You just heard it. What are your thoughts on Iran stopping those oil tankers after this whole ceasefire?
Listen, I'm really not surprised. Obviously, we all breathed a sigh of relief yesterday when we heard the news about the ceasefire. But I think that anybody who's been following this, they are not surprised that it is not standing, because obviously a lot of it is contingent upon what Israel does. The ceasefire seems to have been primarily through, you know, Iran and American diplomatic talks. However, when it comes to Israel, that is clearly a force that we cannot constrain, we cannot control. And so really, the longevity of the ceasefire and it lasting the entire 2 weeks, it was really dependent on the way Israel decided to move. And we saw last night they were bombing, this morning, I believe, bombing Lebanon,
yep.
One of the really the most Christian country in the Middle East. I think it's absolutely disgusting right. And demonic. And so I'm really not surprised that Iran is taking a hard stand here.
Well, what it shows me is that, you know, Bibi does act almost in his own interest and autonomously.
Sure. No, absolutely. And the thing is we look at it over here just as Americans, we feel like we have no control. I think the rest of the world just feels like they have no control. Moving forward, of course, we're obviously like anti-war and we're praying for peace. We want this peace deal to go through. Amy, how likely is this in your mind?
Listen, again, it's all dependent on what Israel does. I mean, I surely what we do as well. And I think that really comes down to, is Trump actually gone insane? Is he the madman that was reflected in that post that he put out on Easter? Or was that a strategic tactic that he used to make them think that he had gone mad
right.
So that they would be willing to come to the table with peace talks and negotiations? But ultimately, I believe the true consummation of the peace proposal, it rises and falls on Israel, and we cannot control them. They're acting of their own accord. And so it's going to depend on what
Israel Lebanon's does. A disaster.
It is. And here's the thing, even without Israel in the equation, I look at the peace plan and like the rhetoric that's coming out. Both sides are like claiming victory right now.
Right.
Iran has come out with this long statement saying, oh, we made them cave in to our demands. And then, you know, Pete Hegseth goes on to, you know, goes on air today and being like, oh, well, they came begging to us too. So where do you see the actual plan? Like, who's whose plan is the real plan?
Who do you think
we got 10-point plan and then we got 15-point plan. And Rex and I have been confused all this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all kind of confused. Whenever we've heard any speculation of peace talks or Iran wanting to come to the table with negotiations, they've had their spokespeople come out and say, we are, in fact, not speaking with you guys, right? So yep. It's difficult to tell who is bluffing. I mean, obviously, I'm not very trusting of our government. So I certainly cannot say either way, whether Trump is being entirely honest with us. I think that maybe it was a combination of all of the people yesterday calling to invoke the 25th Amendment, just the way that the general population reacted to just the brute force that of him willing to literally take down an entire civilization. I think that maybe that kind of caused him to pump the brakes. But when you look at this thing from a bird's eye view, what have we really achieved out of any of it? I mean, when you look at the plan that's on the table, they're allowed to continue enriching uranium, according to them. They still have a supreme leader who is even more radicalized than the original one because he watched his whole family die. And really, the only thing that Iran has not gotten from this so-called agreement is the reparations that they initially asked for. But they do kind of get the opportunity to rebuild their civilization using the money that they get from the toll, from allowing ships to pass through the strait. And they're kind of using that, I guess, in lieu of the reparations. So what has the U.S. actually got from this? I think it would be wise for Trump to just lie to the American public, who obviously aren't as tapped in as all of us, and say, we won, guys. We got all of our strategic outcomes. But anybody who's been following this thing knows that that's just simply not true. I mean, we've just lost American lives, and all of the objectives that they initially set out to achieve have not been achieved. But I think it would be wise for him to just lie and say, we won, guys. We did it. But again, ultimately, I think it's all just going to depend on how Israel chooses to act from here on out.
I have to say, like, we agree, and we think there is real mobility on the U.S. side, people that want peace, but it really is all dependent on really our 51st state in the region. It's U.S.-Israeli empire that we really always talk about on this show because we're kind of joined at the hip. And we would like to look at things in a vacuum where, like, okay, it's America and the American people should be put first, and it's our interests that are the priority. But we're seeing it reflected not just in politics, but in media as well. I wanted to ask you this question. What do you think of the neocon faction? Do you think that is going to be there's been this resurgence in the right wing, so-called right wing. We have these chicken hawks, these war hawks, people that love conflict, that love death. Do you think this is just a flash in the pan, or do you think this is making a resurgence? Do you think this is going to be kind of like the new takeover of the Republican Party back to the age of John McCain?
I don't think they ever really left, to be honest.
Right.
But I think what's kind of heartening for me is seeing this surge of America First candidates really stepping forward and running. And it's not at the level, obviously, of a presidential level, but we're seeing people who are running for governor, who are running for Congress, running for Senate, people who are boldly claiming that they are America First, they are anti-war, they're against AIPAC, they're against foreign lobbying. And there's been a huge shift, I think, even with normal people, largely due to this war. I mean, it's terrible. It's disgusting. The one positive, I guess, if you could call it that, is the people who are opening their eyes to the fact that the government does not care about them. It doesn't care about them. It doesn't care about the effects that this war has on people economically. Obviously, they're feeling it when they go to fill up gas, right? Obviously, it's impacting our relations with our allies in the region. And people are looking at this and they're saying, did they consider us at all when they endeavored upon this pointless war, this pointless war of choice?
Right.
And so I think that the more people continue to open their eyes, the more viable these America First platforms are going to become, not as just some fringe ideology, right? But something that's actually a viable platform to run on.
Yeah.
And so I honestly think that that's our biggest hope. And we start small. We start with local governance. We start with, the district. We start with the state. And then when we get enough of the people in who reflect our ideals, eventually we can make real change.
No, I think that's a phenomenal point. And when I think about America First, it's not America First in the sense of like isolationism. I think because we're in a global market, we're all connected and we're getting most of our food overseas. We're getting a lot of our consumer items overseas. So there's no way we could like go back to, you know, the 40s and be like, okay, or the late 30s and be like, okay, we're isolated completely and we're not going to do business with anybody. And it's just America only.
I got something to add to this and I want to toss back to you. Like, it's following the golden rule. Like, we want our country to do unto other countries as we would like done to us.
Yeah.
Right. Wouldn't you say that's a good way?
No,
to describe
that
it?
Is a good way. And so when we talk about the rest of the world, and I'm sure you're following this as well, I hear the accent. I'm not exactly sure where you're from. Is it Australian? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's a really good guess. Yeah. I mean, I haven't been back to Australia in 10 years, actually. Wow. But yeah, I was born and raised in Australia. I call it Aus-American now. It's a bit of a weird blend. But honestly, that's why I'm so patriotic and why I love America so much, because seeing the way these Western countries around the world have fallen, Australia included. And by the way, Australia has been one of the countries who have most been impacted economically.
That's
by
what
this
I was going to ask you about.
It's like $12 a gallon to fill up in Australia right now. And it's terrifying. I mean, some people have been acting very erratically in certain regions of Australia. There's no groceries on the shelf. There's a lot of fear mongering that's going on over there. And so, you know, Australia's a mess. The UK's a mess. Socialism is taking over. There's no freedom of speech. In Australia, people are being arrested for wearing T-shirts that say "From the River to the Sea." There's guys who are behind bars for giving like a 40-second speech on Australia Day, simply stating that Israel is not our greatest ally. And so when I look at that and I look at the freedom that we have here, that's what makes me so patriotic, but also terrified at the same time that we're going to lose it here. They're already passing anti-Semitism laws here in Florida, where I live, also in Ohio. And thankfully, they're not really being enforced, at least not at scale. But I'm scared of what's going to happen when this power grip that Israel has over us, if we don't stop that, they could just click that on button and all of a sudden these laws that breach the First Amendment start being enforced.
I mean, we talk about that all the time on the show, and this is like, it's civil rights, it's human rights, it's literally liberation, pro-humanity. Like, how could you not be for free speech? How could you not be for liberty to say and think and do what you actually believe in, as long as you're not hurting somebody? And that's the real American ethos. And what this country has done, what this state thousands of miles away has done, is they've made us prioritize their interests like they're our interests, and they're just not. On its face, like, Israel's interests are just not our interests. So why are we involved in this? Why do we fund it? Why do we fund the death? Oh, because if we're not running that region, somebody else will. It's the big bad man theory. We have to be the big bad man, right, or else there'll be another big bad man that'll come in. We can't have that. And a lot of the time, what that theory does in the minds of people, and just kind of like the common American thought, is like, well, you know, I'm just Joe Sixpack. I don't know about the war, but I assume the war is good because it's for my empire and the empire needs to propagate itself. They don't even know about any of the dozens of, or hundreds of civilian factions, of populations, of tribes, of people that have been displaced, that have been murdered, that have been killed all around the Middle East in places they couldn't even point out on a map or know that exist.
Yes.
Right, Tim?
And the question that, yeah, no, you're 100% right. And so this is where I wanted to go with this conversation and ask you, because you're probably, you know, well-versed about what's happening around the world as well. You know, I look at the situation and I see like the United States has so much influence. Everyone across the world follows what the United States does. We breathe. People are like clocking.
It's the show of the world. It's reality TV.
It's the show of the world. So, you know, they're reporting more in the U.S. sometimes than they are in their own countries. But then we also have the ripple effect of all the economic impacts that happen here, or the decisions we make impact a country that has nothing to do with it. And so you were talking about something earlier about what Australians are going through. And I wanted to talk about like the standard of living. Are they making as much as Americans, but then also suffering worse on these ripple effects that are happening based off of the conflict and all of that?
I would say earnings like for minimum wage are higher. It's like a $26 minimum wage. I would say when it comes to like industries, you know, gig economy, that type of thing, I'd say it's probably very similar. As well as when it comes to like professional work, but definitely the cost of living is much higher. I believe that Sydney is the most expensive city in the world to live in, Whoa. If I'm not mistaken, or at least up there, like
it's
one of the very
one or
very
two
top.
With New York. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. And so, and then when it comes to things like grocery prices, gas prices, definitely much higher than over here. Absolutely. Because Australia, it's a mixed economy. It has a lot of government benefits, socialist aspects. You know, there's free healthcare. There is a lot of programs that can qualify you for free education, for example. And simultaneously, they have a huge immigration problem, illegal immigration problem,
really?
Where they're flooding the country. Yes. I mean, multiculturalism, it was always prevalent when I lived in Australia. But now you go to a city like Sydney or Brisbane, Perth, any of these major cities, and you are hard pressed to look around and spot like a white Australian, honestly.
Who's
and so.
Moving there?
People from all over the world, a lot of Asian countries and a lot of third and second world countries. Like we do get the overflow of these war-torn countries where it's no longer safe for them. They come over to Australia, a lot of Lebanese. And unfortunately, what happens then is these illegals also get access to the same level of benefits that the Australian people had. And these are things that I was grateful for growing up. I mean, I took a couple of ambulance rides to the hospital and they were free. But now we're at the point where the resources are absolutely overwhelmed and people are calling for ambulances, especially in rural places. And they're just not coming. They're not coming in time. People Wow. are dying. There aren't enough hospital beds available. And because of this issue where there's just everything is free, but there's not enough to go around for absolutely everybody, they have to put the cost of living up to make up for that. And so people are really struggling in Australia.
Well, you're making such a key point here. It's the same people that want these wars that also want the mass migration. So you go, hold on, you want us to go pay and spend billions of dollars to go destroy these countries over there, and then you want us to take the migrants that result from the economic turmoil and the destruction of their nation.
And then they complain. It often comes out as a complaint of like, wait, how did all these immigrants end up here?
They're the most passionate. I hate the Muslim, blah, blah, blah. But you brought them over here.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
And it's like if the country. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I do have a theory about it because Australia is also one of the most dystopian countries when it comes to things like digital ID, for example. Like I've been on record for a while now saying that I wouldn't be surprised if Australia becomes the first Western country to resemble communist China and basically like everything except names with like a social credit system and things like this. They recently passed a law where you literally need to even upload your ID to be able to use things like Google, for example.
What?
Not sure if that's been fully enforced yet, but yeah, you do need to use digital ID. And I think what they're trying to do is two things simultaneously. They're trying to create this dystopian, technologically advanced society while simultaneously ushering in the third world and creating so much instability by doing so that eventually all of the Australians are going to call out for a solution. Hey, please help us get these people out. And then that's when they're able to really switch on the digital ID at scale and enforce something like a social credit system. So it's like your typical problem, reaction, solution playbook, in
right.
my view.
Right. And also a big part of it is the people you're bringing in from the third world or whatnot. They're just happy to be living in a first world country. So they're going to take whatever kind of deal is given to them. And ultimately, the goal is to replace you and to have a new permanent underclass, kind of like in 1984. You have the elites and then you have kind of the people living out in the boonies that are just kind of controlled. And that's what they're trying to do.
It is kind of like a negative feedback loop. And I even like we talk about the illegal immigration that comes out of Mexico. I mean, it had. You know, the United States decided instead of going into the conflict with Iran and said, hey, let's address the cartel and
yes.
all of these things that are happening in our hemisphere that are causing the ripple down effect where the people don't have the stability to want to live. Like, come on. I mean, we don't think about like when we go home and driving on the way home and like having a point check, like a checkpoint where somebody has a gun up to your head and
sure.
says, well, you need to pay us
sure.
if you want to go back home.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. There are military actions that we would support, right? But we never get anything that would actually benefit the people. It's always just for some giant transnational capital scheme. From what you're telling me, Australia sounds like a Terminator or a Brave New World.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and again, that's why I'm so patriotic and why I love the United States. It's why I haven't been back to Australia in 10 years. In fact, I don't actually think I could go back anymore. I'm pretty sure I would be arrested if I went back. Because I mean, I've been pretty outspoken about what I think when it comes to Israel and Bibi Netanyahu and the Likud party. And honestly, the people in Australia who've been arrested, it's been for far more benign things than stuff that I've said. So honestly, I am a little fearful of going back. And that upsets me to an extent, not because I want to live there, but, you know, I'm married. We're trying to start a family. One day I'd like to bring my children to meet their grandparents over there. And so that's a little bit upsetting for me. And I don't really think that there is anything that can correct course in Australia right now. I mean, people are starting to wake up. There was a march for Australia last year where tens of thousands of people took to the streets protesting. And of course, the Australian media labeled it as white neo-Nazis, right? Which is what they always do. Whenever you try to speak truth to power, they just label you as all of these names. They try to discredit you. So the people are waking up, but again, I'm a little bit fearful that it's already too late.
And I hate seeing those little cops prance around their yellow vests with their little cute hat. Oh, la, 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 we're all happy. Those are the most authoritarian Nazi-like thugs. I mean, think about COVID. I mean, I've seen videos of a parent dragged away from their child as their child is force injected with a vaccine. That came out of Australia. I've seen videos of people raid people's homes and come and grab old ladies because they're posting on Facebook about going to an anti-mask protest.
Yeah.
Talk about that maybe a little bit.
That's what radicalized me, actually, in politics. I was actually quite apolitical prior to COVID. I just hadn't really informed myself. I would say I lived a fairly regular life. And I was living out in Maui, Hawaii. That's where I initially moved when I came to the United States. I was out there for 4 years. And then COVID hit. It was pretty bad in Hawaii. I'd say it was one of the worser states, you know, people were getting in trouble for walking out on the beach, you know, police approaching them. And so I decided to move over to Florida. And while all of this was happening, my mom would call me still every day, even when I was in Hawaii, which I still considered to be pretty bad lockdowns. And she would say, "I am so relieved that you're in America." And that's kind of what radicalized me to think, like, what are the difference between these political systems? That what, you know, Australia is currently experiencing is so different to the freedom that we still have in the United States, especially in these red states, right? Which is why I moved out here to Florida. And it got me really curious and actually started to really expand my understanding of political systems.
Sure. Well, it's a beautiful thing to be able to participate in free society, to have First Amendment, to have Second Amendment, all the things we take for granted in America. These other nations, they don't have the rights that we have. And this is something that we discuss all the time on the show. You know, if we're really about exporting democracy, if we're really about exporting free speech, then instead of J.D. Vance wagging his finger in front of the EU leaders, you know, instead of going to this war with Iran, why haven't we blockaded Britain? Why haven't we blockaded any of these nations that are suppressing and oppressing their own people? And I think it's so clear to see. And it's so obvious. These are deprivations of human rights. These are illegal. These are crimes against humanity, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what, and when we come back from the break, I do want to ask you just a little bit about kind of like the differences between the U.S. and the rest of the world and the things that, you know, we might not understand how good we have it, because it's very often that, like, I have conversations and sometimes I catch myself as I've read a story and I'm like, oh, wow, that's really bad. I wouldn't want that.
Absolutely.
We're good over here. But yeah, we're coming up on a break here. This is a phenomenal conversation. We want to continue doing this. You guys, you should give her a follow.
Absolutely. You got to follow her on Rumble. Want to let y'all know we got that methylene blue tincture sale. Going to keep telling you about it. 72% off. If you're thinking about taking methylene blue, taking it in the past before, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get that methylene blue. Really incredible product. We got methylene red as well, our own proprietary blend, and the cooler bundle. We're going to be right back with Amy Dangerfield after the break.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it and you like it and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigly, our sponsor, has a really high-quality, private-label, top-selling brand that we were able to private label we're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high-quality zeolite. Please do your own research. And then go to theoliveshowstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Enter Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick. Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bolivine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite Detox Formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners, the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now please visit thealexjonesstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber, lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time, so all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs, cancel any time, $30 a month, get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything at thealexjonesstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your Zeolite formula now at thealexjonesstore.com.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom. Show. It's going to be live at 11 a.m. Central. You don't want to miss that. You want to stay tuned. We're joined by Amy Dangerfield. We're doing this interview. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins here on American Journal. How are you doing, Amy? Go ahead and talk about what you want to talk about, Tim.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you about, like, you were touching upon something earlier here with the differences, you know, here in America, and you're like, I'm so blessed to be in America. And let's just highlight some of the things that we have, you know, way better than the rest of the world, and that we kind of don't even realize about it. Because I have things that I've seen, but you probably have a better idea.
Yeah, I mean, I just think like an encoded, like, Bill of Rights, right? The Constitution. Like, Australia doesn't have anything that even closely resembles that. And so that's why it's so easy to take away people's liberties. Obviously, Australia was disarmed in the 90s. So it's extremely difficult to own a firearm. And obviously, that is to defend against a tyrannical government. Ultimately, that is one of the core reasons why. And Australia's government is certainly becoming tyrannical, more and more so by the year. And there isn't really anything that the will of the people can do to push against that, especially as they implement more of these dystopian policies that impede upon the First Amendment and their right to privacy. Australia is a Commonwealth country, so it is the little brother of the UK. And obviously in the UK, we've seen very similar issues when it comes to illegal immigration, when it comes to things like digital ID, and when it comes to things like being arrested for tweets. I mean,
arrested for tweets. Really?
Yeah. In the UK, there's been over 1,200 arrests for tweets. So are you guys familiar with the grooming gang situation in the UK?
No.
I am. Break it down.
So essentially, this gang of Pakistani men have abused thousands upon thousands of women. And because of the cultural sensitivity and not wanting to appear racist, some of these women who have spoken out and in fact made posts calling out the Pakistani grooming gangs have faced worse repercussions than the rapists themselves.
Wow.
It's sickening. So they're making these tweets calling out the situation, calling out the revolving door of justice where sometimes they take these guys in, they go to charge them, they release them shortly after. And the more attention this situation is getting, people are posting about it online. And then the next thing they know, police are showing up on their doorstep to apprehend them for bringing awareness to it for their racism.
Right. The victim becomes the criminal, and the criminal becomes the victim. The criminal is protected by the system. The criminal is let out on bail or no bail at all. The person that talks about it tries to raise attention to it. I mean, we played the clip on a Harrison show when I did War Room, and it's some ridiculous and just – why do they wear the powdered wig? All of it it's so insane. It's ridiculous. And the guy is like, I don't want to pay for migrant health care. This is such a grave and serious offense that you are going to spend 2 years in prison to think about your actions. And it's just like, screw you, man. Like you're not enforcing a law. Like you're enforcing a totalitarian state. You're enforcing a Nazi regime, right?
Yeah. That's basically what it is at the end of the day. And at least that's where we're heading. All of the signs are on the wall. And to me, the United States really is the last bastion of freedom in that regard. And that's why it terrifies me that we do have these anti-Semitism and hate speech laws. Like, what even is hate speech, right? At the end of the day, as long as it's not directly threatening violence against somebody, right?
There's clear examples of that. And then there's other ones where they just take that one example and they blanket it for everything else. And it's like, those are two very different situations.
I like the idea that, we don't know what free speech is. Like, hate speech isn't free speech, blah, blah, blah. Here's what free speech is. You can't slander somebody in writing. You can't defame somebody with your speech. You can't call for action. Can't call for violence. Can't yell fire in a crowded theater, anything like that. Anything else is fair game. Totally fair game, especially.
I mean, well, you can do those things, but then there's legal recourse that comes with it, right? Like if you slander someone, then you'll get sued by them civilly. Right. But in Australia, if you do something like that and you're calling out the wrong group, a protected group, then you get arrested through criminal proceedings.
That's insane.
And that's a very different thing. When it comes to the hate speech laws that are currently being enacted in Australia, I think they're some of the most dystopian in the world. They carry up to a 5-year prison sentence. And it is not even if what you say directly results in a Jewish person being harmed. It's simply if you instill fear inside of them. That is the verbiage and the language used around that law.
So I can say, Tim scared me. I want to throw him in jail. Like, you see how insane, you see how insane that is? But oh no.
Yes. And who's the arbiter of fear? Like, who's the arbiter of what constitutes that fear?
Well, and
that's why it's such a slippery slope.
And this was the same thing we were complaining about. I mean, this is what moved me from the left over to the right. And now I'm kind of back center, but like in COVID time period, they were censoring everybody for COVID related topics. You had the Democrats just throwing people off of accounts left and right. Some of it to combat misinformation, which were just completely like you could discredit and disprove the specific theories. But it was like everything was fair game for them to go and suppress. And that was like, Yeah, that doesn't work out. And so now we're seeing the pendulum switch the other way. And like even people on the right now are calling for censorship and the whole you're an anti-Semite and all those things just for questioning what Israel is doing.
And notice how they never pass less laws. They never take laws off the books. It's building up this corporate red tape structure that ultimately, you know, down the line in the future, when everything's integrated with technology, the digital ID, the social credit system that you're talking about, Amy, there's going to be no way to run from any of this stuff. And we're still in a very early age of even looking or knowing what that looks like.
Yeah, very true. You know, even here in the United States, I mean, thank God for free speech platforms like Rumble and like X. I mean, even X has been a little bit dicey. Like there are some posts that have shown up on my timeline where it's like, this post is being reported or this is a censored post and you click it and it's something like super benign or informative. So it's even getting a little bit dicey with X. But I will say, like last week, I had my first YouTube video just completely stripped and removed from the platform.
Really? For
and
what?
It was literally just a video of Nick Fuentes saying that he supported my wedding because my husband and I, we wore our America First hats in some of our wedding pictures after the fact. And it was just him saying like, hey, America First is a movement. This is a community. It's a part of people's lives. They care about it. It was literally a wholesome video. And it was taken down for hateful conduct.
Wow.
Apparently. Just because the person who was saying it was Nick Fuentes. And
well,
so
No. They're saying it because America First is hateful because we're Israel First. We're MEGA. Do you not see? You are being quite racist when you do something like that.
So the problem here is, you know, there are some people that I see take the America First thing too far. There's always extremes with every platform, every ideology in certain regards. But if you just look at kind of the baseline understanding of what people are trying to get is just
prioritization
yeah. of just making sure we have the things that we need met here before we're just shipping a bunch of money overseas and getting into all these foreign entanglements. The only problem is where it gets extreme and where they start, you know, start bucketing everything is the people who take it to the extreme and be like, we need to like start killing all the Muzzies and start killing all the Israelis and the Jewish people are the satanic cult and they lump the entire group instead of attacking the individuals. And that's where it gets dicey. But again, it makes it hard for the people who are trying to push the right agenda.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I will say that I wouldn't conflate America First and that kind of movement with isolationism. I don't think it's that at all. I think that a lot of people who claim to be America First were supportive of the actions in Venezuela, for example, because that's our part of the hemisphere. Obviously, there is an issue with like drug cartels and things like this. So I think that was actually beneficial for the interests of the American people versus getting involved in foreign entanglements overseas at the behest of a foreign nation because they want to maintain regional dominance when Iran has never done anything to attack America.
I think what it comes down to is that the American people want to see themselves prioritized. And when you talk to Americans, of course, domestic policy is always the thing that people are upset about. They're upset about grocery prices, gas prices, infrastructure, things happening here. And the price tag for fixing things here is so dirt cheap compared to the billions and trillions they spend on these damn wars. I mean, we broke it down, and this isn't even the full sum of the number. I'm sure it's actually much higher. We take the $11,500 that they're spending every second. We multiply that over 2 weeks. That is, what was that figure again? That's
$1,210,000.
So think about it. We got 35,000 homeless veterans. We could have given 35,000 homeless veterans $11,000 like 100 times over. But more than that, even. But we couldn't do that. We can't do that. Can't do anything for the people at home. It's always for the people overseas. So what I see America First is it's the farmers. It's the manufacturers, the small business people here at home. It's the people that have to live here and deal with the American system that's supposed to be the greatest thing in the world. We're the greatest country in the world, but the people here suffer.
Yeah, the people here suffer. And people are going to have different stances. I think you and I probably may have differences in terms of what the Venezuela conflict should have been and what the narrative around that. I firmly believe it was more about the oil and the control over our own hemisphere than it was about the drug cartel that Trump was pushing, because a majority of the fentanyl he was claiming, cocaine, comes out of China. And then you've got cocaine
Mexico.
That comes out of Mexico as well as Colombia. But
it is our hemisphere.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, that's what I was going to say. Sure. But I mean, I lumped that in at the end, but I did preface by saying it's our hemisphere. It's something that can directly benefit the American empire at the end of the day.
Yep.
How does attacking Iran give any benefit to America? I mean, again, they say it's so that, you know, Israel can have regional dominance, but that terrifies me even more. I think you need to have checks and balances in the Middle East. I don't think that we want Israel to have total hegemony over the Middle East. That they're the ones who actually have nuclear weapons that don't have any type of agreement tied where we can go and inspect them, right?
Yeah.
Whereas we did when it came to Iran. So none of this makes any sense to me. I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to lobbying and foreign interests. I don't think it's any coincidence that Donald Trump's AIPAC takings went from, I think it was like $20 million, which is still a lot of money, but now over 200 and something million dollars shortly after he was elected.
Right.
And now we're getting into a war that could have potentially sparked World War III and still could, by the way.
Yeah.
Right. And I truly believe that that is at the behest of a foreign government. And that is what we need to stop. We need to do things that actually prioritize American citizens. And totally that truly does not, in my view.
No, I agree. And Rex and I are on the same page as you. And we just appreciate this conversation. And you did mention to us that you are doing something about this America First. Could you clarify what you've been kind of cooking up here and that you're going to be launching pretty soon?
Sure. So, again, I feel like the one white pill that's come from all of this is even regular people, everyday normies, they're starting to open their eyes and seeing that the parties in their traditional form don't actually represent them, the people. And there's been major breaks inside both of the parties on the left as well as the right. We have people, you know, who are even withdrawing from their parties to run as an independent because the party's values no longer reflect them. So there are America First candidates who are running left, right, center, independent, libertarian. And I essentially have a vision of putting them all together in one room and showing people that the America First movement is not only vital to the interests, serving in the interests of them, the people, but it's also it's a viable thing. You can actually run on this platform and you can actually win. You look at the state of Florida, for example, James Fishback. I did a rally with him out in Naples, Florida at Sea to Table. It's the most conservative grocery store in the United States. It was my first live audience podcast since becoming an independent creator. And I was a little bit scared, guys. I thought that, you know, Naples, there's a lot of boomers there. There'd probably be some more neocon type people in attendance. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with James and some of his policy proposals, but I thought that we would get some pushback from the audience. I knew there would be cheers, but I thought there'd be some boos as well. And I was shocked to see that young people came out in record numbers and there was nothing but positivity. That room was electric. And he's now pulling in crowds that are adjacent to like Trump, what he had when I'd say Trump was at his maximum charisma level, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just incredible to see the firepower that's following these America First candidates. And now more and more of them are coming out of the woodworks. We saw Mark Moran in Virginia actually withdrew as a Democrat to run as an independent. But there's some great Democrats running as well. Jose Vega is a really
good interviewed him. There. We've had it, Jose and Fishback. We've interviewed both of those guys. Yep.
Jose's great. You know, I would back him more than a Republican, for example, if that Republican was beholden to AIPAC. Mm-hmm. There's actually a guy, Jared Christian, who's running out in Ohio's 12th district, and his Republican challenger is a man named Troy Boulderson, who's taken over $250,000 from AIPAC, over $250,000. I would rather endorse and put my support behind Jared, who's made it a campaign. He's running on a campaign of economic populism, but also he says that he wants to reach across the political aisle and work with people on the right to help weed out the corruption.
Yeah.
I also got to give a shout out really quick. Sorry to Casey Butch as well, who's running for governor as well. Ohio. Okay. Running against Vivek Ramaswamy, who is a globalist Trojan horse. And so there's so many of these guys. There's literally at least a dozen of them.
Yep.
And so I'm working with Casey. We're going to put all of these guys in a room together May 2nd. We're going to do a continuous all-day live stream with candidates from the left, right, center, along with America First influencers and commentators. So that way they can come out, they can provide context, they can give endorsements if they so desire, and they can even give cross-aisle endorsements. And that's something that I personally and people I know will be doing, because we're just so freaking sick of the corruption and we want to show the establishment we hate you guys so much.
Yes.
That we're literally willing to work together to put an end to the badness. Well, and I think that's what we need right now. We need unity.
That's the thing that I was going to say, is there's finally issues that are big enough for everybody to go, hey, we need to unite on this. We got to stop the death, stop the wasted money, stop the killing, like bring our country back ultimately, because we're not going to have a country much longer. And you can kick the can down the road for a long time, but we're reaching a point where we're going off the cliff here.
Yeah, we are. And what you guys are doing is phenomenal. Amy, do me a favor. After you get off, connect with our producers. We want to get your contact. We want to get in touch with you. We have had a lot of these people on our platform already on the gray area, as well as on InfoWars here, and we want to support this. We want to be able to be a part of this. So I think what you guys are
doing.
I'd
love to have you guys there.
Where is it going to be?
It's going to be in Columbus, Ohio. And I just think this is so important. And the reason why there's so much unity is because people are realizing that the establishment actually engineer a lot of these culture wars through their NGOs that are funding both sides. And they want to keep us fighting with each other so that we're too distracted to notice that they are, you know, getting entangled with foreign interests, that they're committing genocides, and that they are betraying the American people. But we're too busy fighting each other to even notice. And so I think that's what people are opening up their eyes to. And the event in person, it's going to be great. It's going to be a meeting of the minds. But even more important than that, it's going to be an all-day continuous live stream. And all of these candidates have the right to use the content to stream it to their own platforms, because we're in a very rare moment in time right now where the movement is on our side. We need to mobilize behind these guys to actually get them through their primaries.
Gotcha.
Wow.
No, this has been a phenomenal interview. We definitely want to be talking with you shortly after the show.
And we want to get connected. We want to go to the event. We want to do all of that. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Amy. Really appreciate your time. Just really quick, where do people find you again?
Yeah, you guys can find me on YouTube, Rumble, and X, Amy Dangerfield, across every platform. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Another phenomenal interview in the books. Really appreciate the great Amy Dangerfield coming on the show, breaking all this down for us. And we really appreciate the global perspective as well. And, you know, maybe we should ask her more about that later next time she comes on.
Yep.
It's just the population in America is so isolated, but you get someone that comes from a country that really has had draconian restrictions on rights, where the people are truly oppressed. And these people are so grateful to be here in a country where these things aren't at least, happening large scale.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's very interesting to see her rattle off the list of names of people that, like, you know, we've been watching and we've been talking to them. And you just realize this world is a lot more interconnected than you realize. And there's a lot of these grassroots guys that need more support. It's hard to go against people who have already been part of the establishment and have millions of dollars backing them, like a Byron Donalds.
Sure. Absolutely. And you can
look Vivek's a billionaire.
Exactly. And you can look at Fishbet and criticize him, say whatever you want. He's running a very effective grassroots campaign. And we're going to see a lot more of this in the future, not less of it. We're going to see a lot more. This is the new political equation. It's going to be people replicating the success of Trump based off of actually having these original ideas and opinions that don't fit in with the mainstream. The real test of time will be seeing if characters like this, once they get elected, if they actually stick to their guns.
Yes.
And we're going to hold people, they're going to hold their feet to the fire. We're going to hold people accountable. That's our job in all of this as chroniclers, as people that are doing journalism, doing media. Our job is to track the timeline and make sure there aren't any deviations from it.
Yes.
Because we want the solutions, don't we? We want the solutions.
We always want the solutions. That's why we do the deep dives. That's why we do the news blitz. That's why we do it in a way that's impartial. I mean, we've said this before, but I'll reiterate it here again for you guys. We're not picking a side. We're humanity and America. We want everybody to cooperate. We don't care about the right. We don't care about the left. Whoever has the equation. She mentioned Jose Vega.
Right.
Very grassroots guy from New York. He's left wing. But when we talked to him, he didn't sound very left wing. He wasn't saying, I want transgender schools all over America. It was nothing like that.
All these issues that define left and right are just so minor and they don't even matter. What really matters is the death of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people around the world. They want to depopulate the planet. They want everyone under a control grid, a social credit score, a system. We're saying, why do we have to do that? So it's our job to be honest and logically consistent and to bring the best people to you guys that we, in our view, we see as doing that as well. And then we can kind of build that brain trust together.
Yeah. Right. And I also encourage people, you know, that the reason why I was asking Amy a lot about the rest of the world is to open our eyes and kind of clear the gunk that has been piled on us day after day after day, doom and gloom, doom and gloom, doom and gloom. And, you know, that's why I try to bring a little bit of white pill perspective. I was like, hey, talk about how good we have it. You know, we wouldn't be able to sit here in this space right now talking about Trump in China. They would have sent the black truck.
That's right.
Came into this, shut this operation down, grab them, throw them in prison.
Right.
You know? So we gotta count our blessings at the same time.
And we also must preserve them. But to preserve them, we got to be aware of them. And that's what we're calling for here. Just like we live in such a great country. Even now, the people here are so great. It's our job to wake up our brothers and sisters that have fallen asleep and are under the spell of the Mockingbird media, the mainstream media. It's our job to say, wake up. Mm-hmm. Wake up and realize what's happening now in your own country while you still have the rights and the freedoms left to preserve it and to fight for it.
Now, before we go here, do you want to talk about what you're cooking up here for the morning?
Yeah, that's an excellent segue. I appreciate it. So this is the last week ever of the American Journal. Our last show is going to be on Friday. However, I'm going to keep the time slot. I'm going to keep it alive. You guys want to catch up with me and continue the show on forward. I'm going to be doing my American Journal here on X. I've got a URL for it. I'm going to be setting all that up today. I'm going to be plugging that starting tomorrow. But just know, I'll be doing a 3-hour show 5 days a week in the morning, combined with the gray area stuff that we're going to be doing at night as well. Yeah. More frequently right now, we're doing that show Thursday, Sunday. Probably we'll eventually go back to doing it Tuesday as well. We really love it. So,
and we're not disappearing or anything like
that.
It's just the
transition.
Everything's changing here. You know, I mean, people are like, what's happening? What's going to happen? You guys have been dragging this thing out. No, there's real things happening.
There's real things happening behind the scenes. When you see us say, hey, please support us, and like, we need your power to stay on air, like, that is all 100% true. That's always been true. And American Journal is over on Friday. So if you want the new home of that, follow me, Rex Jones News on Twitter. It'll be live on my profile there every day, as well as the YouTube and Rumble that I'm going to be setting up. Just wanted to plug that. And we got the Alex Jones Show coming up. And we got really powerful information. I mean, I've been so proud of my dad and the coverage he's been doing of the conflict.
Sticking to his guns, man.
Calling balls and strikes, being anti-war, being pro-humanity. We love it. And that's why, like, we're just really proud to be on this historic network and to get this, to do this news coverage, right?
Yeah, man. And we're just going to try to carry the baton. This won't be the last time you guys see us. We'll also be here on Friday.
We'll be on New Network as well.
Yeah. So you guys are going to be getting more of this. But again, sometimes you got to shed the old skin to make something new, and it's going to be bigger and better, guys.
Absolutely. Like the Phoenix, we shall rise from the ashes on the New Network, on the New American Journal Show, on Gray Area Talks, on everything we're doing, because this is an info war, and the info war never sleeps. The info war never takes a break. The info war never pauses or stops. It continues on. It marches forward. And we're in that battle. We're fighting that battle with you, the info warriors out there, the viewers and listeners. We got the Alex Jones Show about to come up. We love you. It's always an honor. Tim Tompkins, Rex Jones, The American Journal. We'll see you on the other side.
Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors, and that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself is InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition, that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts, this is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder, 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. This is personally one of my favorite shirts in the new line. Now here's the classic InfoWars logo on a white shirt. Never done black on white. Seems like we should have. Looks great. Got the 1776 on the shoulder.
You are literally funding and supporting and wearing your uniform in the fight to defeat the globalists. InfoWars is 28 years old. America is 250. And look at the back of this clean shirt. USA 250, 1776 forever. Semi-quintennial, that means 250, baby. America's birthday with badass hats as well. And then, of course, we've got the new limited edition, America at 250 years old. And the back of these shirts are amazing Americana. And I designed this, the Betsy Ross flag with 250 on it. Get yours now, thealexhostore.com.
I'm back because I forgot one point that I want to be very clear about. This is a fundraiser. We need funds to continue on and the new operation. It's urgent. These are historic shirts. We've taken the info war this far. Please take action now. For those of you who have been on the fence over body thing, thealexhostore.com, but have shared links and things, I appreciate you. But come on, folks. We're the tip of the spear. We need you. We need your support. You're the tip of the spear. Thank you so much.